Eat Drink Indie Radio is powered by eatdrinkindie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Drink Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, you'll find interviews and information about local food, the people who are raising it, making it, cooking it, talking about it, and working to bring us more options in local food and drink. This week, we'll catch up with entrepreneur Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Soda, a new beverage that just got a boost from a national publication. And we'll talk wine as well when we stop in at the new River City Winery Tasting Room in Franklin, Indiana. The winery's Brian Alvey tells us about the local reception to the New Albany Winery's new location. And we've got some magic for you today, too. We'll talk with local magician Taylor Martin about an upcoming pop-up dinner that recreates the former Illusions restaurant, complete with performances of tableside magic. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We've heard a lot lately about the up-and-coming food scene in Indianapolis, and our top chefs and restaurants have gotten considerable attention lately. But one local beverage business is stepping into the spotlight as well. Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas from the husband and wife team of Aaron and Stephen Eds recently gained a mention in Bloomberg Businessweek for their artisanal wine cooler-inspired malt beverages. And that was after the company was named a recipient of Beverage Industry Magazine's 2016 Innovation of the Year Award. We've talked with Aaron before here on Eat Drink Indie Radio and followed her efforts to bring the new Garden Party line to the market, so it was time to catch up with her again. I talked with Aaron recently at the Speakeasy Workplace in Indianapolis about the Garden Party story and what she's been up to since launching the new line in November.
Since we launched in November, we are now in approximately 150 individual locations, including Target and Fresh Thyme. We're in several restaurants, including Ale Emporium and Ralston's Draft House down on Mass Ave, and it's just going great. We're looking forward to the weather warming up.
So it's been a good launch, right?
It's been a fantastic launch. It's well exceeded our expectations.
Now, what did you have in mind for it? Did you have a scenario that you were expecting?
We knew that we were launching at a really odd time of year for our product because it's very much a seasonal driven drink, very much in tune with warm weather, patio, picnics and outdoor events. So we knew we were launching at an odd time, but that allowed us to build the relationships to get the distribution in place and to get ourselves situated for a great spring.
Well, now tell me again about, kind of describe the product in case people aren't aware of it. I'm sure they're starting to see it now out and about. But describe Garden Party a little bit.
So we are a 100% all natural botanical hard soda. Now, when you hear the word hard, you have to realize that means that there is alcohol in the product. And that's been a big challenge for us as far as consumer education, that it isn't just a botanical soda. It is an adult beverage. We have two flavors. Violet is lemon infused with lavender and blackberry. And Ruby is a spicy ginger soda infused with hibiscus and pomegranate.
Now, what do people, you mentioned consumer education, so are people not understanding what the category of a hard soda is? Because, we have been seeing, hard root beers and that sort of thing out there. Is it new? Is it something unusual?
So the definition of the category is well-defined. Where we fit in that category is maybe a little bit more confusing for the consumer. They're used to hard sodas being very generically flavored and extremely sweet. We've dialed back the sugar considerably compared to the other brands in the market and have more complex, culinarily themed or born flavor profiles.
So it's different from the hard lemonade, the hard soda, things like that that we might be aware of, but it's in that same category.
Right. It is malt-based, so from a legal standpoint, it is technically a beer product. And a lot of the nostalgia from the brand comes from the Bartles and James and the Zima consumers of the, 90s. And so there's a nostalgia factor, but we are elevating that experience to a more defined palate.
So like you've said in describing the product, the wine cooler grows up, right? So maybe if someone was drinking Bartles and James in their 20s, and maybe they're in their 40s now, and they're not drinking, that silly sort of wine cooler anymore. So maybe is that the market you're going for?
Absolutely. If you enjoyed a good Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, in college, then you'll definitely enjoy Garden Party because it's floral, it's botanical, it's sweet, but it's not too sweet. It's very food friendly. And it's something that you can enjoy in a myriad of settings.
And it is in a can, right? So this is where the seasonal kind of thing comes in, because I'm imagining it in in coolers and that sort of thing for events.
That was a huge factor in why we decided to go into cans. We're home to the world's largest single day sporting event, being the Indianapolis 500. Which is a BYOB event, but the one thing you can't bring is glass. So let's give consumers who don't necessarily want to drink beer all day an alternative to things that they can pack in their coolers and enjoy.
So now give me a little bit of the backstory of the product and how you developed this, because, a botanical hard soda, it sounds a little, like it was kind of hard to come up with those kind of flavors. It sounds a little more complicated than some drinks that we might be more familiar with.
So way back, go back to 2007, 2008, my sister Katie and I had Country Mouse City Mouse, which was an artisanal food brand. And one of the things we did to complement our offerings at the farmers markets was make drinks. And we had a lavender blackberry lemonade and a ginger hibiscus pomegranate iced tea that we would sell by the glass. And so we already had kind of tested those flavors out on a wide consumer base and thought, hey, let's try to carbonate them and add alcohol and see how they turn out. And they worked really well.
So you kind of had the recipes already in mind. Were you waiting for the right time? I mean, talk a little bit about your personal saga in the beverage industry, because you know this is not your first rodeo.
It's not. I wanted to wait until I was officially separated from my first venture before I started to pursue anything else.
So people might remember you from Hoosier Mama days, right?
Right. Correct. I was the co-founder of Hoosier Mama back in 2010. And when I exited the brand, I went to teaching at the culinary school at Ivy Tech, because I was pretty sure at that point I was done with entrepreneurship. But, that is a bug that doesn't leave you very easily. And so we just started paying attention to trends in the industry. When we saw Not Your Father's Root Beer, we realized that this was a category that was probably going to make quite a comeback. And then you have Charles Jolie up in Chicago, who has Craft House, which is a ready-to-drink cocktail. And so between the two of those, we definitely saw that there was a opportunity to introduce a premium product in a category that up until that point didn't have a premium offering.
But now, when you created Hoosier Mama, you did that because someone asked for something like that. and you said, yes, I can do that, and you created the recipe and that sort of thing. How did you go about, you know, launching a whole new brand?
I mean, it was literally like a wing and a prayer. I was reading an article one day that was talking about the reemergence of the, really the wine cooler category and how it was kind of ripe for relaunch. And I sent Stephen, my husband, my business partner, a text that simply said the wine cooler grows up. And he pulled his car over and called me and said, okay, we're doing this. And so,
it was
kind of a, you know, pie in the sky, something we were working on just kind of on the side. And then it quickly became what we were going to be doing.
So I find it fascinating to think about just deciding, I'm going to create this beverage in this burgeoning new category, and then you made it happen. I mean, you had to work with some pretty big issues. You know, you have formulation and flavors. And so tell me a little bit about that.
It's amazing how hard things get when you decide to add alcohol to something. Everything I had done prior to Garden Party was either food or a non-alcoholic beverage mixer. And so we had, I mean, the learning curve was steep. We luckily were able to find a group that helps manage the process for startups, specifically in the alcoholic beverage industry. So they helped us figure out compliance, helped us source our manufacturer, and helped with, you know, regulatory stuff that we wouldn't have had a clue about.
So you just kind of dove in?
Yeah, without a scuba tank or goggles or, yeah. We pretty much went in, you know, guns blazing, saying, what do we do best? We make things work. And so we made it work. And so far it is.
We've been talking with Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas. Stay with us for more from Aaron here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Big ideas often start out pretty small. That was certainly the case with the new Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas that launched late last year in Indianapolis. Garden Party is the latest venture from Aaron and Stephen Eds, and from the national attention the company has received lately, it looks like Garden Party is definitely poised to go big. But the inspiration for the hard sodas came from products developed years ago for our local farmers markets. Aaron Eds tells us how they took the product from idea to development, the research that it took, and who she called when she saw her product in a national publication. So tell me just a little bit about some of the national attention, the awards, and media attention that you've gotten lately.
So before we even launched the product, we were named Beverage Industry Magazine's 2016 Innovative Product of the Year. Now that is, it's a trade publication, but it's a national trade publication for anything that's liquid and consumable. So it's everything from coffee to coconut water to vodka. And they recognized what we were doing was very different and innovative. And so they named us one of five out of an approximate 3,000 new products that are introduced to the market every year.
So you were one of five.
We were one of five. And it was something that we did not apply for or submit our names for.
So this is just something, some entity noticing you and deciding that your product was going to be innovative even before it was to the market?
Yeah, it was industry recognition before we even launched. And that was just absolutely incredible and just a very strong validation of what we were doing. Now, yesterday, we had our first national non-trade publication recognition. We had a beautiful write-up in Bloomberg Businessweek talking about the new artisanal approach of the wine cooler and the hard soda market.
Well, now that must have been very exciting. What did you think when you saw your product, you know, in a publication like that?
Called my mom and you know, just looked at it and said, this is incredible. I can't believe this is actually happening. You know, we're just a 2-person operation and we have a great team built up around us, but you know, we're, you know, Indianapolis, we're, you know, just distributed in the state and we're getting this national attention that, to my knowledge, is pretty unprecedented for any brand in Indy.
So it is very cool. You are just distributed in Indiana right now. And so people are finding you somehow, though.
Yeah, the writer of the Bloomberg, the Business Week piece, reached out to me via our website. So he was Googling and searching for information on different brands that fit into the category that he was featuring. We sent him product, and he chose to use us as one of the featured brands.
Well, now you mentioned the website. You do have a pretty awesome website. So tell me a little bit about that.
So we work with this awesome design and marketing firm called Rare Bird. And they developed our website. It's very whimsical. It's very kind of fantasy land. You know, we have a fox and a tuxedo and a unicorn. And it's very, you know, playful and fun. But it's also really informative. We have a great location tool on our website if you're looking to find the product to purchase. And we also have a lot of great recipes because not only can you drink it by the can, you can also make it, use it as a mixer for cocktails.
Now, was that intentional? Was that part of what you thought of when you were designing the product?
It actually was not. Our original intention was a single consumable product that would just be enjoyed on its own. But when we started doing our focus groups, the restaurant and bar owners that we knew said, you can make some pretty incredible cocktails with these as well. And so we had to kind of wrap our minds around the fact that, you know, we already had a product that had 8% alcohol, but people were going to be making cocktails with it too. So that was a surprising sort of add-on for what we did.
So you mentioned the focus groups. How did that go? Did you get a lot of good response from that? Is that a helpful kind of step in the process?
We went through 5 rounds of R&D. So each one of those, we did a small focus group. Towards the end, we did larger focus groups and gave the participants surveys to fill out anonymously as far as, you know, how they felt about the different flavors and if they thought they could be improved upon and how. And we took all of that information and incorporated it into the next round of development.
So this has been an ongoing process. How long did it take from when you sent that text to where we are now?
Started officially working on it in November of 15. So we're at almost a year and a half since, you know, we first uttered the words and we launched 4.5 months ago.
So how did the idea of Garden Party come about?
The flavors are botanical, they're floral, they're, you know, using various things from herbs to fruit to botanical elements. And so to me, that's just, you know, a garden party. And then you have the aspect of the entertaining side of things where especially the bridal industry right now is very much about the kind of the do-it-yourself, the Pinterest, the Etsy, you know, the kind of whimsy of everything as opposed to being very formal and traditional. And so it fit in that way too.
Well, you kind of fit into that category, the sort of do-it-yourself kind of category. This is sort of a do-it-yourself company, right?
Yeah, it totally is. You know, when Stephen and I got married almost 14 years ago, we were DIY before DIY was a thing. I mean, I handmade all of our invitations, all of our favors. You know, it was just very crafty. And I see Garden Party being very much the same way, much as Country Mouse, City Mouse, and Hoosier Mama were. You know, they were born out of a kitchen and introduced to a farmer's market.
And so, you know, we just kind of took that model and scaled it.
So what have been some of the challenges? I mean, I'm sure this has probably been a hard process too.
Consumer education is probably our most challenging thing right now, just because we want to make sure that we're defining the consumer, the customer's expectations as far as what they're going to experience when they try the product. Without that element, it can be a bit surprising when you do try the products, because they're very, very, very different than anything else on the market.
Well, now, when you say surprising, what do you mean? You know, how do you describe them?
So with the Ruby especially, that's the one that I think takes the most upfront information, because it's very ginger forward. So it's, you know, spicy, like a Moscow Mule, but then it has a lot of tart and floral elements as well. So it's not necessarily that it's sweet, it's strong. And it can be surprising to somebody that doesn't know what they're getting themselves into.
So like if they were imagining a sweet wine cooler, it would be a surprise.
Absolutely. The Violet, on the other hand, is very approachable. It's, you know, it's citrusy, it's kind of juicy berry and a little bit of floral lavender, but it's very easy to drink. It's very clean. It's very soft. And I would say that that's probably the fan favorite. Although the people that love Ruby are like hardcore about it. They love it.
So do you have more flavors that you're working on? How do you develop a new flavor? What's your process, your thought process?
Right now, we're just paying a lot of attention to trends in the market, to see what flavors are emerging, what's becoming trendy. We have two flavors that we've been fleshing out. I don't know if they will stay, but we're definitely intending on coming out with two more.
How do you see the business growing? I mean, it seems like this could be, you know, a whole line of these sorts of drinks.
Yeah. You know, when I first learned the term line extension, it was hard for me to wrap my head around, because I was very focused on the products that I had already created. This is back in Hoosier Mama days. But when we created Garden Party, it was like so obvious that there were so many different opportunities to take it in other directions, whether it be spirits or wine or, you know, liqueurs. There are a lot more opportunities within a brand that you don't set out just to have one or two SKUs.
Are you always thinking? I bet you are such an entrepreneur and have such an entrepreneurial attitude. I bet you've always got these ideas just kind of cooking around in your head.
It's really hard to focus on anything else, because once I become fully committed to something, I go all in. So, you know, I know for Steven and I, living together, being married, and also being in business together, it's perfect, because we're both obsessed. We're both completely obsessed with Garden Party. We're both completely committed to making it work. So the fact that we're pretty much doing it 24/7 works.
We've been talking with Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Sodas. For more information on the company, including where to find the products, go to drinkgp.com. We are back here on Eat Drink Indie Radio, and this week we headed to Franklin, Indiana to check out a new winery tasting room. Now, we devoted a whole show to Franklin last year, and our Franklin tour guide, resident Brian Alvey, told us that River City Winery of New Albany would be opening a tasting room in the Johnson County seat. Well, now River City Winery's Franklin tasting room has opened right on Main Street, and I stopped by the new tasting room last weekend to talk with Brian about the winery, the reception it's gotten from Franklin residents, and its plans for the future.
It's been excellent. We've been packed since we opened silently on Thursday evening. We've been packed ever since. So we've been here, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and now we're here on Sunday. And we're staying full.
So why do you think that is? What's the appeal of a tasting room, and give me a little bit of the background of the winery too.
Sure. Well, first off, we have good juice. The wine is excellent. The second thing is you know, Franklin is growing. It's a wonderful control growth. So we're not growing just for the sake of growing. The things that are going on in historic downtown Franklin are amazing. We've got new breweries popping up, restaurants, and just boutiques, all these really wonderful. So a winery to me was just a logical fit to diversify the offerings a little bit, and I think Franklin was absolutely past being ready for it, and they're proving it. They're just rolling in the front door.
So you didn't have a winery in downtown Franklin or a tasting room or anything like that, right?
The closest was Mallow Run up in Whiteland, and they're wonderful, and we compete with, not against them. And we definitely recommend that anybody that enjoys wine, make sure they stop by them. I believe they close at 6 during the day, but by all means, check their website or give them a call. So hit them and then come see us in the evening, because we're opening in the evenings on the week, Monday through Friday we open at 4, and then on the weekends right now currently opening at noon Saturday and Sunday.
And you're open late too, right?
Yeah, we keep hearing the locals beat the drum that there's nothing to do on Sunday night in Franklin, so we're going to give it a shot for a while. So we're staying open till 11 on Saturday and Sunday and Friday as well, and we'll just see how it goes.
Well, now tell me what people can expect when they come in.
Well, you're going to get an opportunity to taste some wines. We're going to help you navigate our wines to find the ones that you prefer. And then you can buy by the glass, by the bottle, by the case, however you wish. We are a winery, operate a winery's license. So the one big question comes up, can we do carry out on Sundays? Absolutely, we can do carry out on Sundays. And we just nice environment where you can sit and enjoy your wines here, take some with, and the outside seating's coming soon. We're right here on Main Street, about equal distance between the courthouse from the historic Art Craft Theater, and the view's amazing and the location's amazing. So that's why we jumped on this location when it freed up.
Well, tell me about River City Winery and why here in Franklin, you know, and how that all came about.
Well, with all my background that I've had in the bar, restaurant, beverage, wine industry, you would think it would be that, my connection with the owner of the winery and the winemaker, Gary Humphreys, but we actually met through a similar community within the military. That's how we met. This industry is how we gravitated into a friendship rather quickly, and the geographical. We're an hour and a half from one another. It's just the easiest drive in the world. Just go straight down 65 and hit New Albany. And we've always just talked. A lot of similar interests. And then last May, we're just like probably a couple bottles of wine. We're like, hey, I got an idea. And he was wanting to do a tasting room. I lived in Franklin. I got some back. It just was a perfect fix. Or a perfect mix, and there's no brand. Then this location became available, and we just pulled the trigger and went with it, and here we are. So Gary started the winery back in 07 down on downtown New Albany on 123 Pearl Street. Old building that was empty, and the downtown New Albany area was struggling, and he was really one of those that walked point on revitalizing. He actually fell in love with the building before he decided to make wine. He's like, okay, I want to get this building. I want to save it. What am I going to do in it? And he's like, I know, a winery. So he got the vineyard, Eagle Crest Vineyard, up, and he's been making wine ever since. And since 07, he's accumulated a significant amount of trophies and medals for his ability to make amazing wine.
Well, from looking at the tasting notes here, it seems like there are a lot of award winners, certainly with the Indy International Wine Competition.
Yes, and Gary does his fair share of judging now as well, and he doesn't miss. That's an excellent, excellent event. That's definitely one that Gary won't miss. So, and I don't know, how do you argue with success, right? He's just amazing in his ability to make wines. Who knew that two guys that used to jump out of airplanes for the government and run around in places that most people don't want to venture to would be in the wine biz?
Well, it seems like it's working out for you. I mean, but then you have a kind of a history in wine, in the wine industry, and with wine dinners and that sort of thing. So this isn't anything new for you, right?
No, I had an event venue for a while. We did a lot of wine tastings and stuff. I used to own Agostino's Italian restaurant and wine bar, where we routinely were rated in the top three with the different contests and whatnot up in the city of Indianapolis every year as a wine bar and as an Italian restaurant. I think the last year we were in operation, we were number three behind Mama Corolla's and Iria's, which I thought was a great company to be in. It was an honor, and I'm glad we didn't beat them because I didn't want to live up to that. And then same with the wine bar. We were the only people that were popping up on the radar with wine south of Fountain Square, you know, in Indianapolis. We're on the south side, and then, you know, us and then Vino Villa. Vino Villa has always been one of my go-to spots for sure as well, so give them a lot of credit.
So how do you think that the winery fits into what's going on here in Franklin?
Well, it just fits in perfectly because there's nothing down here yet. Like, there's a few restaurants that offer some decent wines that you can have with your meal, but nobody's specializing in wine of any sort. You know, I definitely, if I wanted wines in, you know, the Richard's Kitchen is the go-to spot. Richard Goss and the gang there have a good selection of wines down there at their Brick Oven Pizza. And then I would also go to Greek's. Greek's has a few just good wines to go with your pizzas and stuff like that. But other than that, there's really not a whole lot. Maybe Athens. Athens restaurant has a few decent bottles, but
So you're feeling a kind of a gap in the local marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. We are filling a gap. There's definitely a call for it. The market's here. So the reception's been well. The anticipation was big. We were getting messages every day on our social media. When are you guys going to open? As soon as we're allowed to. So we had to go through, with alcohol, there's a lot of different levels of government bureaucracy you have to deal with. And it's just part of the process, and here we are. And man, they rushed in.
Well, clearly. So, how do you see it progressing? I mean, do you see you see the reception continuing to be good? Do you see more growth, that kind of stuff?
But definitely growth. We're here very soon. Going to do the outside seating portion here. Definitely needed. That way, we can also seat children because currently we're a 21 and over venue because we don't have enough room for our limited separation. But this is really us testing the waters, in a sense, in Franklin as well. I know it's going to be successful, but I want to see it build a following and then grow into a full operation like the main winery down in New Albany, where we offer a vast array of food options, more of a higher-end food palette at a medium price level.
We've been talking with Brian Alvey of the new River City Winery Tasting Room in Franklin, Indiana. For more information, look for The Tasting Room on Facebook. There always seems to be nostalgia for longtime local restaurants that have closed. People pine for a favorite dish or miss their favorite server. But in the case of Illusions in Carmel, what people miss is the magic. And not just the magic of an appealing ambiance and wonderful dinner. The magic as in card tricks, sleight of hand, and other tricks of a magician's trade. Because Illusions employed real magicians, many of whom have gone on to work with national performers and venues, and those magicians would perform tableside at Illusions, so that your meal also included a serving of magic. Now, those who miss the Carmel restaurant can get a taste of Illusions at an upcoming pop-up dinner. Put on by local promoter R.J. Wall of Chef's Night Off, the Illusions pop-up dinners take place April 1st and 2nd and will feature several of the Illusions magicians, including local performer Taylor Martin of Indie Magic Monthly. I talked with Taylor recently about the upcoming pop-up dinners and looked back at the magic of Illusions.
It was started in 89, and a lot of people who are still in the magic scene were there as the original magicians, Pat Smith and Mark Brandeberry and people like that. And it was a place sort of hopefully that it was going to become sort of like the Magic Castle, but on a more interesting, but local level, using local magicians. And we had some great magicians move here to be in it. Chris Kenner, who is now chief assistant to David Copperfield, was one of the original magicians.
Oh, my goodness.
Mike Close, who works for Penn & Teller, he's the talent coordinator for Penn & Teller's Foolus. Homer, who was the bartender, is now the technical director for Copperfield. And so people would have dinner, and the dinner menu was presented in a magical way. They'd show a bag empty, and the person would reach in, and the menu would come out. And there would be little surprises all during the dinner. And then afterwards, they get a close-up magic show. Really good close-up magic.
So there was a local magic community that mm-hmm. that had a spotlight for their performances.
Yeah. We had a lot of great guys. We have a very strong magic club community here at that time with the Society of American Magicians and the International Brotherhood of Magicians. Plus, we had a gentleman named Harry Reiser who was on a jazz show on one of your other stations. And Harry did jazz lives, but he's also one of the world's greatest teachers of magic. And so Mike and everybody came to Harry's house up on Washington Boulevard. And his sign-in book features people like Ricky Jay and of course, Mike Close. And it just goes on and on and on.
So how did it happen that you started working at Illusions? I mean, do you just answer an ad for that sort of thing?
No, people knew me for doing things. I'd already been pretty well established doing magic. Plus, everybody knew me as a merry minstrel. I was one of the original singing telegrams
here in Indiana.
So I do magic during my telegrams, and I was going all over doing different kinds of things. I'm basically a character magician, so I also have an English colonial magician named Rodney the Younger who performs at the Feast of the Hunter's Moon in Mississippi,
cool.
1812, and Andrea Merlin, the Queen of Magic, so designated by Mr. Pendulette himself. There's a lot of kings, but you are the queen. Some people just called and said, you know, you really need to get Taylor to come up here. So the first weeks that they were open, when you know it was still really packed every night, they had me come in, and then I went from there. I'd worked right up until they closed in February, the day after Valentine's Day of 2003.
2003.
Yeah.
So it hasn't, you know, there are still plenty of people around that have been to Illusions, and I think
people
are
still
looking.
Come up to me and say, "How's Illusions doing?" Closed.
That's right. So it's been a while, but I think people still have that in their heads, and I think that's why the idea of doing a pop-up dinner mm-hmm. based on the idea of Illusions is
right.
so interesting.
Yeah, and I've got some of my art, which was also exactly what they had in the hallway to help decorate. We're talking with Sue Hare, who is the last owner of Illusions, and she has some things that she's going to loan us for the night, I hope. It was a wonderful time, because even if you weren't working there, you could go in like at 10 o'clock and hang out and watch the show in the bar. And then afterwards, you know, people would hang out and we'd start, you know, showing different tricks to each other. And hey, you're doing that wrong. No, don't do it. This is the way that Vernon does it. Oh, well, you know.
So what was the show like when people were at Illusions? You know, they would order. You know, there was the you know a menu on a magic handkerchief,
magic
or
handkerchief,
something like that.
And then they clear the servers would clear, and we would come up and sit down like maybe a little small mat to do our magic on. It'd be cards and coins, or it'd be anything that is either close up or is known in the trade as micro magic stuff that you just won't see on television. Or you won't see in most shows like Indie Magic Monthly, which is my show. And you will, you know, so it would be anything. You know, it'd be like I would start off usually by singing like a chipmunk and doing a rope trick. Then I would
okay.
I would put a scarf through their arm and attempt to chop their finger off and then end up with a card trick. You know, so there was your 7 minutes right there. If you had, it was a two top, if it was a four top table, it'd be a little longer. And if the bigger the room, the longer the show was.
So what was the reaction, of people, you know, with the combination of food and magic?
Well, if the food was really good, you know, they'd come for the food and the show, and then people would watch it. And we got all sorts of reactions. We get everything from total astonishment to people saying, are you sure you're just tricking me? You know, you'd once in a while get somebody who became really afraid, that in this day and age it seems silly, but I think we still get it. There's a lot of superstitious nonsense out there. And I get, you know, are you a real magician? I'm as real as they've ever been. You know, so we get, you know, families coming in, they bring their children, and it would be the first time that maybe a youngster had seen a live magician. Sometimes it was the first time that the parents had seen a live show, you know, because they one time did a survey that the average person sees a live magician only seven times in their life. And I think that's off balance because I've probably seen hundreds of magic acts over the years. And what was always great, if we went into the lounge, they always did card on the ceiling, which was a signed deck, a signed card put into a deck. They'd wrap in rubber bands, throw it up at the ceiling, and the chosen card would stick to the ceiling. When they closed, there was 400 or 500 cards stuck to that ceiling.
Oh, my goodness.
It was amazing that they even had a spot left open so people could see the signed card.
So there was a good reaction then
from
the audience, from the diners.
Yeah.
So are you anticipating a similar sort of reaction?
Oh, we hope so.
At this upcoming pop-up?
We hope so. I think there's 60 seats, and if they're not sold out, they will be. And we went from one night to two nights. We're doing it on April 1st.
That's
What's a greater day than to have a magic show on April Fool's Day?
Isn't that great? So the first one is April 1st
with
Chef John Brooks. Right. The second one is April 2nd with Chef Craig Baker. Both of them at the Plow and Anchor Space. So there'll be, you know, obviously a good menu from excellent chefs. But what will it be like from the magic point of view?
Well, if you see Pat Smith, he usually wears the brightest colored suit you've ever seen in your life. And it could be anything from orange to chartreuse. And he walks around and he'll suddenly be talking to you and his eyes will bug out and he'll have a couple ropes around his neck and he'll pull the ropes through his neck. He'll do some of the best card magic you've ever seen. Ryan Siebert's the same. I'm going to sing like a chipmunk at least once. And, you know, Christmas time is near. And so we'll go from there with all that stuff. And I think the reaction will be that people, if they were at Illusions, they'll feel like they're back there again. If they didn't go to Illusions and they always wanted to, they'll get a feel of what it was like.
Well, see, that's what I'm hoping, because I hope to get there.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if we would get that feel of the original restaurant.
Yeah, if people are having fun with us, we'll have fun with them. If they're going to give us a hard time, we'll have fun with them.
Still, right?
I'm going to bring all my standard stuff that people know me for. And then if we do plan to do something afterwards, I'll maybe bring somebody up and put a sword through their neck or something like that.
We've been talking with magician Taylor Martin, who will be performing at an upcoming Chef's Night Off pop-up dinner in Indianapolis. Stay with us for more on the dinner here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We've talked before here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio about local pop-up dinners, ones that take place in unusual venues or those that feature popular chefs or that raise funds for a particular cause. But this week, we're talking about some pop-up dinners, and instead of focusing on the food, we're talking about the entertainment. An upcoming pop-up presented by RJ Wall of Chef's Night Off is inspired by the magic of Illusions Restaurant, which operated in Carmel from 1989 to 2003. And by magic, we mean magic. Illusions employed magicians who entertained tableside. And that's what will happen at the Chef's Night Off Illusions dinners that take place April 1st and 2nd in Indianapolis. The dinners will be held at the former Plow and Anchor restaurant downtown and will feature menus from top chefs Jonathan Brooks and Craig Baker, but they'll also feature magic from former Illusions magicians. One of those magicians, Taylor Martin of Indie Magic Monthly, tells us what we can expect at the upcoming Illusions-themed pop-up.
So this is going to be a real magic
show. Oh, it's
show.
Real magic. Oh, yeah.
In addition to an awesome dinner,
This
is going to be a pretty awesome magic show.
Oh, yeah. The three of us, Ryan and I did the Super Bowl Village for 11 nights. You know, so we're both very quick on our feet. Pat Smith is not only is a magician, but he's an electrical engineer. And you might even, if you're trying to call him, find him that he's in the, I can't get a hold of you right now. I'm in the bottom of a mine in Alaska. You know, that, you know, his major income comes from something else. But I think our joy is in magic. And magic is the oldest documented performing art form. It goes back 5,000 years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I think that with that kind of history, and also the history of magic here in Indianapolis, I mean, between Harry Reiser and Houdini was a friend of J. Nelson Blackledge, who was a great magician here. And we actually, the last time that Harry Houdini did his upside-down straitjacket escape was right in front of the old Blackpool Hotel down on Washington Street.
Oh, my goodness.
And after that, he said, physically, I can't do it anymore because, you know, the blood was rushing to his head. A lot. Yeah. Everybody shakes their head and go, yeah, I know.
I didn't know that we had such a magic sort of heritage here. But now you've been doing a lot with magic. You've got Indie Magic Monthly, right? Yeah. Now tell me a little bit about that.
We started that April 1st, 2008. Our 9th anniversary show is on the 4th of April. And we are having one of the world's greatest magicians, one of the most influential of all time, of the 20th century, Eugene Berger. He's coming from Chicago. And we've got two other Chicago magicians, Luis Carrion and the wonderful Benjamin Barnes. And Benjamin founded a show called Magic Chicago, and that was sort of the inspiration for me to start Indie Magic Monthly at Theater on the Square.
Now, what did you think when R.J. Wall, who's the promoter of Chef's Night Off, what did you think when R.J. got a hold of you and said, hey, I want to do this magic
pop-up? I said, sure, when do you want to do it?
So,
and we just had to decide, and he said, well, I got to. I said, well, do it on April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. He says, well, yeah, that's a gimme. Why didn't I think of that? And I'm just learning more and more about Mr. Wall. I think I'm looking about how much he does in this city with cooks and the pop-up restaurant idea and everything else. It's a whole different world for me to be involved in. And at nearly 65 years of age, I'm about ready to say, yeah, this is great. Come on.
Well, it seems like, the whole pop-up concept kind of has a natural fit for magic, right?
And I'm glad to see that it's here. Like it. You know, I've heard about pop-ups, happening, that chefs are fixing food for chefs after hours. All over, we watch the Food Network, I think, and we see the wonderful culinary heritage that America has. And what we're doing with all the different foods and things. I mean, everything from, Anthony Bourdain traveling the world and showing that if the world just shared their food, we probably would have a lot less of a mess of what's going on right now. Not that there's really that much. I think some people are just doting on fear. But, magicians, magic is the only art form that ever stopped a war.
Oh, no.
Yeah. John Eugene Robert Houdin's light heavy chest was brought to French. Not French Ethiopia, but one of the countries in Africa. And there was a charismatic leader called the Maudi who was saying that he could take the strength from the strongest men and give it to his people and they'd become invincible. And so when Napoleon III, the emperor of France, heard about that, and he didn't want to have a fight there, he sent Robert Houdin to do the trick and then expose it and show that it was a trick. And when the Maudi said, well, I'm doing this, and people started understanding that it was a trick, the man's the faith in the man fell apart, and the revolution never happened.
Well, all right.
And as far as we know, the only art – there's been paintings that have started wars, but I've never known a painting or anything else that has stopped a war. And look it up on Wikipedia. It's called Light Heavy Chest. In fact, the man who owns the actual light heavy chest that Robert Houdin used lives outside of Cincinnati, Ohio. I've actually seen it and played with it and went, wow, what an interesting trick.
So this is very cool. I love all of this. So now tell me just a little bit more about some details of the dinner. So it's April 1st
I don't know what they're serving.
Second?
It's April 1st and 2nd at 6 o'clock.
But they're serving might be a surprise.
I hope so. But they're starting at 6 o'clock. So I think, service will probably be at 6:30. Right now, it's scheduled 6 to 9. I don't think we have to worry about getting out of there. So if Pat or Ryan wants to do a straitjacket escape, they can do that, or Pat brings in one of his song, A Person and a Half Illusions. And I don't know who I'll be. I'll probably be a Speed Taylor, but, I'll be there and just having a wonderful time. It's great to do close-up magic at dinners. I've done dinners recently within the last year at the Propylaeum, and we're trying to arrange with some of these other people, some other restaurants to do backroom dinners with magicians. And as we have progress, just another outlet for magic. Magic, you know, is the oldest documented performing art form. And, you know, it goes, and one of the oldest things that man has done is learn how to cook a piece of meat, you know,
well,
or
so,
something.
So yeah. There seems to be a good fit.
Yeah, it's the age, you know, that it's history. And with illusions being the center of it, and the three of us having been in illusions and being able to put something together for RJ, I think it's going to be a very spectacular evening. So, you know, check it out on Facebook, the pop-up dinner, or just look under RJ Wall, and I'm sure you can get to it. There are a couple different websites. I'm sure you'll have them. You'll talk about them after this. And or check IndieMagicMonthly.com, and we're going to have that all hooked into it, so you'll be able to. I got to get my plug in for my show. Come on. You know? I mean, there's very few magic shows that last 9 years, and we have had over almost 200 different magicians and acts at Indie Magic Monthly. And we've had everybody. We've had some of the best magicians in the world. I mean, Eugene's coming. He's one of the best. Jeff McBride, Chad Long, Sean McMaster. Look at Master's Illusion or go and see the Illusionists or any of these shows. And I'll bet you there's at least one person who has performed at Indie Magic Monthly. I'm pretty proud of that. And I'm pretty proud of being able to put this together for the pop-up restaurant.
We've been talking with Taylor Martin, who will be performing at the upcoming Chef's Night Off Illusions-themed pop-up dinners. Tickets are still available for the April 2nd dinner. For information, go to chefsnightoff.us. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for supporting local food-focused radio, and thanks also to our guests, entrepreneur Aaron Eds of Garden Party Botanical Hard Soda, Brian Alvey of River City Winery in Franklin, Indiana, and magician Taylor Martin of Indie Magic Monthly and the upcoming Chef's Night Off Illusions pop-up dinner. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.